Welcome to On The Money Line, a podcast by MMA Play 365. I'm Newsome and I'm here to break down UFC Vegas 74 after the 1 week break that we had last weekend from the official UFC events. Of course, we had Road to UFC last weekend, but from these official UFC events, it was a 1 week break. And we come back to actually a pretty decent fight night, if I'm being honest. One that I am looking forward to. I think there's going to be some good scraps. I think there's going to be some firework fights as well. So look, we're going to get into it all and break it all down. But yeah, it's a card that, to be honest with you, like I said, I am looking forward to. But just before we get into those breakdowns, as always, there is a Baze AI recap, which is actually already live on the MMA Play 365 YouTube channel, because obviously we had the week break last weekend. I did the recap last week, last Monday, where I'd normally do a podcast as well, but it was just a Baze AI recap. So it was a really good event at UFC 273 as well. A lot of really good winners, high percentage on the straight pick prediction accuracy as well. So if you are interested in AI, in Baze AI, the UFC prediction software, then make sure you go to youtube.com/MMAPlay365, and it's in a Baze AI specific playlist. But for right now, let's get into the breakdowns. We start in the main event, a fight at the top of the UFC flyweight division. We've got Kai Kara France versus Amir Albazi. And this is a really, really good fight against two fighters that, like I said, they are at the top of the flyweight division. They are fighters that are looking towards that title shot. I've gone on record and numerous times and quite a while ago as well, saying that Amir Albazi will likely challenge for a title at some point in his UFC career. Now, I'm not sure a win here does exactly that. And the reason I say that is there's a couple of other good fighters around, like, for example, Brandon Royval. You know, the way he's just knocked out Matheus Nicolau. I'm not quite sure that the winner of this fight gets that automatic title shot. Of course, we've got Alejandro Pantoja as well, who I believe is fighting Brandon Moreno next for the title. Then you've got Davison Figueiredo. I'm not quite sure what's happening with him, whether he's stepping up a weight division or whether he's staying at flyweight. So there's a lot of other good fighters around. But moving back to this fight, like I say, it's definitely whoever wins this fight is going to be inside that title contention. Maybe they fight Brandon Royval as a title eliminator fight, or maybe, you know, situational wise, maybe Dana White and the UFC just make that fight happen. I'm not sure, but as for this fight itself, I think it's going to be competitive. I think it's going to be violent, and I've got my doubts on both sides as well in regards to both fighters. You know, no fighter's perfect, even at the top of a UFC division. So I do think that it's going to be competitive, explosive, violent. I think both fighters are very good in their own disciplines, and I think they're both well-rounded as well, and it's going to be a good fight. Now, from a stylistic perspective, Kai Kara France in this fight, for me, I think he's going to be the very slightly better striker, but it is more from a technical perspective, because Amir Albazi can strike. He does have good combinations. He's patient. He won't waste strikes, so he won't throw and miss too often. And when he does strike now, it looks like he's adding power to his game as well, which is going to be very interesting, because the one thing Kai Kara France has got, and you can't deny it, is he's got power for a 125-pound fighter. And the thing is, he can sting opponents, he can hurt them, and he can knock them out. But the thing is, like I said, with Albazi, it seems like, look, three or four fights ago, we probably wouldn't have been talking about Albazi in this light, but man, like in his last fight, he was cracking Alessandro Costa really hard. He dropped him twice, hurt him really badly, and those shots were just accurate shots, pinpoint shots that, you know, were placed and timed right. They weren't just winging shots that just happened to hit. And I think the accuracy of Albazi is allowing that power to start showing through. But like I said, from a striking perspective, Kai Kara France is pretty much as good as it gets in, you know, the UFC flyweight division. You look at his last fight against Brandon Moreno, a fight where, you know, arguably he could have been up on the scorecards until he took that liver shot, and then, you know, it wasn't there anymore and the fight was over. And this comes actually with one of my problems with Kai Kara France. I just, although he looks really good, and listen, I thought he was always going to be a fringe top 15 type of fighter, but he's proved me wrong and probably others wrong as well. And now, like I said, he's sitting, you know, very high in the division. He's had an interim title fight, so, you know, he's performing really well. He put a win streak together of three fights in a row at the highest level. And then obviously looked great against Moreno until he fell short with the body shot. So the problem that I've got with Kai Kara-France is I kind of think he is still defensively vulnerable. You go back to the Brandon Royval fight. He hurt Royval and then Royval dropped him and hurt him and did it multiple times in that fight before finishing Kai Kara-France. So I still think, whether it's striking defense, grappling defense, I still think Kara-France is somewhat defensively vulnerable. Now, the problem that I've got with Albazi is Albazi has slowed down in fights, in three-round fights. He hasn't got a gas tank issue, but he has slowed down. So in a five-round fight against Kai Kara-France, who seemingly should be able to go five rounds without any issues, there is a little bit of a question mark on Albazi in his cardio. If he does slow down sort of at the end of round three and he's still got round four and five to work, you know, is it a case of Kai Kara-France wins one of those early rounds and then takes the championship rounds? Again, it's something that we're going to find out. However, my counter to that slightly is, look, Albazi's never prepared in the UFC for a five-round fight. He is in Vegas. He is training at Extreme Couture. He is training at the UFC Performance Institute. He's around fighters such as the Basharat brothers. He's been there with Mark Diakese, who's a good wrestler with, you know, who's also a cardio machine as well. So when you're in and around that Extreme Couture group that is a very cardio and wrestling heavy gym, and the UFC Performance Institute that is one of the best institutes on the planet, those are the right places for a fighter to try and prepare for a five-round fight in the UFC. So there is that counter to it that Albazi is absolutely going to be prepared for this fight and potential five rounds for this fight as well. And then when we start moving into the wrestling and grappling, see, this is where I think that it's absolutely Albazi's world now. Kai Kara-France, to his credit, for a striker, a predominant striker, he's got decent takedown defense. However, he can be taken down and has been taken down multiple times in the UFC. And he doesn't have a bad get-up game either, so his defensive grappling is clearly at a certain level that it needs to be for the level he's at in the UFC. However, he will also be out-grappled by a fighter that, you know, is clearly the better grappler, and that's where I see Albazi, because although, like I said, we've spoken about Albazi's striking, it's improving in regards to the power, the accuracy, all that good stuff. Albazi, for me, in this fight, is going to be, or the biggest gap in skill for Albazi is going to be within the wrestling and grappling. And again, he doesn't spam takedowns, he doesn't shoot takedown after takedown relentlessly, but he will hit his spots with good entries, good timing, and once he gets his opponents down to the mat, he can obtain good top control time. Now, maybe it's a case that early in this fight, he shoots a couple of takedowns at Kai Kara-France, maybe Kara-France defends a couple of them, maybe he gets taken down on a couple of them and then gets right back up on a couple of them. But this is a five-round fight, and I feel like the longer the fight goes on, because the thing is, I mentioned Albazi's cardio. Kai Kara-France, although he's not got any, you know, obvious cardio issues, he just slows down as well, naturally, just like any fighter would. So it's not as if the cardio is going to play a massive factor in this fight. I think Albazi will be able to continue shooting takedowns late in this fight. And even if there are some really close rounds from the striking perspective, a takedown with 30 seconds of top control time and a bit of ground and pound and a submission attempt might be enough for Albazi to steal, you know, a round should that scenario play out that way. Now, as you might be able to tell from my tone, I am slightly leaning with Albazi in this fight. And the reason why is I just feel that, look, if he goes out there and knocks Kai Kara-France out, I'm not going to be shocked. But the striking isn't necessarily where he's best. He's best with his wrestling and specifically the grappling. So I kind of feel that with Albazi, if he goes in there and has a 25-minute kickboxing fight with Kai Kara-France, I think it's going to be close. But then when you start adding in takedowns and grappling in there as well, I kind of think that Albazi's got this second path to victory. So he's the fighter, for me, in my opinion, that's got the multiple paths to victory. I think he's less vulnerable from a defensive perspective in all disciplines of MMA. And I just kind of feel like Albazi is just the harder fighter to beat out the two. I just think Kai Kara-France is slightly more beatable. So for all the reasons that I've mentioned, I'm picking Amir Albazi to win this fight. And in the next fight, in the co-main event, we've got Alex Bruce, Leroy Caceres versus Daniel Pitt Pineda. And I really like this fight from a co-main event perspective because, low-key, Alex Caceres has been doing really well lately. I think a lot of people writ him off, you know, sort of four or five fights ago, myself included. I thought he was, you know, a fighter that was going to start hitting the decline, or maybe a fighter that had not really reached the potential a lot of people, or a lot of people had this expectancy of him early on to be this really great fighter, and it kind of didn't play out like that. But Caceres is looking better than ever right now. And as for Daniel Pineda, constantly the underdog, pulling wins out, you know, and really upsetting, you know, the odds and the people betting against him. And like I said, it's a true underdog story with Pineda. So I'm kind of glad that the UFC is entertaining this fight as a co-main event. But from a stylistic perspective, look, I went into this fight thinking that Daniel Pineda might be another live underdog, because he is the underdog again. And like I said, he does tend to cash pretty well as an underdog. So I kind of went into this fight thinking, look, the bookies have got this line wrong. It should be a pick'em. But after watching tape on the fight, I do understand why Alex Caceres is the favourite in this fight. And I think with Pineda, where he's a good underdog spot is against a fighter that doesn't have as much experience as him, that maybe has, you know, just a handful of fights in the UFC, that is, you know, just beaten a lot of opponents that they absolutely should be beaten. And then Pineda's that step up in competition that they weren't quite ready for. And Alex Caceres, for me, just isn't that. And I actually think that Caceres is, or has got, the exact type of style as a fighter that Pineda's had trouble with. And the fight that I match Caceres with closely, and I know that Caceres isn't at the level of this fighter, but Andre Feely versus Pineda. Now, Andre Feely is this tall, long striker that does have decent wrestling and underrated grappling. He's got good movement. He's not very easy to hit. He won't allow a high strike count on him. And Alex Caceres is exactly that type of fighter. I just don't think he's quite at the level of Andre Feely, but he's the same type of stylistic fighter. You know, he's got good movement, elusive movement, in and out of range, good cardio. He won't stop for 15 minutes. He'll constantly just be racking up, you know, low-key volume, just gradually building it up. He's also very hard to hit. He doesn't get hit too much, so he's not going to allow Pineda to put a massive strike count on him. He also fights well out of a southpaw stance, so that low kick that Pineda likes to fire isn't going to be as available for this fight against Alex Caceres. So I kind of feel that unless Pineda can score takedowns regularly and look for a submission threat, I think that's his best path to victory. But to actually get a hold of, to actually take Caceres down, you've got to get a hold of him. And I think that's going to be the difficulty for Pineda, because I just think that the speed and movement of Caceres is going to be a little bit too much for how Pineda moves. And Pineda closing the distance, it seems to be a little bit more static, a little bit more stalking type of forward pressure. But when I do think that Pineda gets close, I think Caceres will do a good job of circling out of there. So I'm not sure how many opportunities Pineda's going to get to actually take Caceres down and maybe fulfill that path to victory that he's got. So I do think that with everything considered, it should be a good fight for Caceres. Pineda's always going to be dangerous. It is tough and difficult to write him off, considering what we've seen lately. But I do think Caceres is going to be the better mover, faster. He's going to be better from a defensive striking perspective, get hit less. I think he's going to rack up enough volume. And for all those reasons, I'm picking Alex Caceres to win this fight. And in the next fight, we should have had Jim Miller versus Ludovic Klein, but Ludovic Klein's pulled out. So now we've got Jim Miller versus the stepping in on short notice, Jared Gordon. And I actually think this is a really good fight. You know, we've got two fighters here that are severely well-rounded. You know, both got really good skills. I think it's going to be a back-and-forth fight, at least for the early moments. I do think one fighter is going to take over. A little bit of a spoiler alert here, but I do think that fighter is going to be Jared Gordon that does take over. But Gordon can't take anything for granted in this fight. Two reasons why. The first one, it's actually Gordon that's stepping in on short notice. I know all fighters stay active nowadays, but there is a difference between staying active in the gym and doing your job and actually starting a fight camp and really turning things up and really pushing yourself to get into that fight ready shape. I'm sure Gordon is going to be fight ready, but there is a little bit of difference between them. Whereas with Jim Miller, he's the one that has been in a camp. But Miller, for me, we all know Jim Miller at this point. You know, he's, like I said, severely well-rounded. He's got good striking. He has got some underrated power. His wrestling's really good. His grappling's world-class. He's a fighter that does like to finish opponents. And look, Jared Gordon, you go back to the Grant Dawson fight, and there are other examples as well, but he can be taken down and he can be controlled from a jiu-jitsu perspective. And look, if Jim Miller gets Gordon down and takes it back, then I'm not sure how Gordon really gets out of those positions, because Jim Miller is just an expert once he's in dominant positions on top of his opponents. But where Jared Gordon, for me, does have the edge in this fight is just his ability, his durability and ability to just start grinding fights out. So he's got a really, really good all-round game. He's got good striking, good wrestling, good grappling. There's not a specific area where he's weak in, but at the same time, there's not a specific area that he's a specialist in either. But that's good enough at this level. And I think that, like I said, I've got a funny feeling Jim Miller's going to start this fight off quite well. But it does seem to be quite common with Jim Miller fights, unless he's fighting one of these up-and-coming fighters that have won, like I've said already in this podcast, that have won fights they should have absolutely won and then took a step up in competition that they weren't ready for. That doesn't describe Jared Gordon. So in the fights that aren't like that for Miller, I do think that Miller seems to start well, but then just fade off a little bit. Like Joe Selecki is a good example. You know, Jim Miller started that fight off well and then lost round 2 and 3. I think Holtzman as well. Scott Holtzman, Jim Miller started well against and then ended up badly. So I kind of feel like it's going to be that type of fight. I think that Miller's going to start off quite well, potentially win round 1, but Gordon's just going to really start turning it up round 2 and 3 when Jim Miller starts fading a little bit. And I think Gordon is eventually just going to start pulling away with the fight. Not sure about a late finish, but on the scorecards, who knows, because Jared Gordon beat Paddy Pimblett, so either way, for this podcast, look, I think it's going to go the way I've described it, and I'm going to be picking Jared Gordon to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got actually a really fun fight here between Tim Elliott and Victor Altamirano. And like I've just said, look, I think the fight's a really entertaining fight. I think it's going to be fought at 100 miles an hour. I think both fighters are game for a scrap. They've both got skills and abilities as well. The only sad part is from Tim Elliott's side, you know, he is dealing with some publicly known personal issues. I'm not going to get into it on the podcast. I don't know. You know, I've not followed too much of it. I know the very basics. I don't know whether there's just one side of the story out or whether there's both sides. I don't know. And to be honest with you, like I said, I'm not the type of person to be getting into people's personal issues either. From a fighting perspective, though, I do think that you have to take it into consideration, because I genuinely believe that the fight game is at least 50% mental. You know, you've got to be mentally ready for a fight as well as being physically ready. You can be the most talented fighter on planet Earth. You can be the best striker, the best wrestler, the best grappler. But if you're not mentally checked into a fight at this level in the UFC, then you're likely going to lose no matter how talented you are. So with Tim Elliott, I'm not saying that he's not mentally checked in, because you look at last week with Mackenzie Dern, who was going through very similar types of personal issues. That was the best Mackenzie Dern that we've ever seen. You know, people calling it Dern 2.0. She came out there and looked as good as she's ever looked, better than she's ever looked. So maybe Tim Elliott takes a leaf out of that book and looks the best that he's ever looked. However, again, it is just a question mark with what he's going through outside the cage. So with Victor Altamirano, though, look, Altamirano is one of these fighters where I wasn't really sold on him at first. I thought he was a very bland fighter in regards to, again, I don't mean any disrespect by saying bland fighter, by the way. I just thought he was going to be one of these mid-range UFC fighters that, again, similar to what I said with Jared Gordon, actually, you know, just good everywhere, but doesn't really specialize in any one particular area either, but also doesn't have too many holes. And I just thought he was going to be one of these fighters that's just a fringe, maybe top 20, top 30 fighter. But Altamirano, I think, is very slowly and sneakily starting to put some really good performances together, and he's got a good step up in competition against Tim Elliott. Now, it could prove to be too much against Elliott. Tim Elliott is one of these fighters that I've never bet against too often, just because I just don't like to bet against Tim Elliott because of his pace, because of his relentless wrestling, because of his cardio and his ability to just be one of the best scramblers in the UFC. He's a very difficult fighter to beat, and that's always something that sticks with me. And I've said it against four other fighters as well, like Merab Dewalishvili, for example, like Ricky Simone. These fighters are just difficult to beat. And forget about everything else stylistically. When you're tough to beat, it's always going to be hard for your opponent to beat you for obvious reasons. So, look, I think Victor Altamirano's got a fight on his hands here, but I do think it's a fight that Altamirano could potentially win here. And how he does it, I think, is, look, when Tim Elliott's starting to be relentless and starting to put the pressure on, Altamirano's got to have his movement down. But I also think that his speed and movement is going to be at an advantage here against Tim Elliott. I think when Elliott's trying to really put a high pace on this fight, I think Altamirano's actually got the tools just to keep the fundamentals sound and keep moving, just to really slow or just halt that forward pressure and pace of Elliott. And once he starts halting that forward pressure and pace, I think Altamirano can then start maybe setting the pace for himself. Now, I'm not sure if Altamirano is able to get Elliott down and keep him down. In fact, I would probably say no. But from a striking perspective, I think he could put a little bit of a clinic on Elliott if he's smart and if he's able to, like I said, halt that forward pressure and pace and start to set the pace himself, also dictate the range of the fight as well. I think Altamirano's got the tools to potentially start putting some good strikes together. And I've got a funny feeling this fight might be the one, might be the coming out party for Victor Altamirano, where some people are a little bit still on the fence. Tim Elliott's a good step up in competition. This is the fight that Altamirano's going to have to prove himself. But then when all is said and done, we're looking back at Altamirano thinking, well, shit, that was a good performance. You know, he might actually be for real. And I think it might be that type of performance. So for those reasons, I'm picking Victor Altamirano to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Karine Silva versus the newcomer, Ketlyn Souza. Now, Karine Silva looked really good in her UFC debut. She looks like a fighter that's extremely well-rounded as well, like good striking, crisp, sharp striking. But then she's also got a submission game. A grappling and submission game. I do think, though, that the wrestling might be something that she needs to really work on in regards, because she's got the wrestling, but just blending the striking into the grappling via the wrestling. And I think that once she's got that blend within the striking to the wrestling, I think that she could be a very difficult fighter to beat. Now, Ketlyn Souza, I think she's a fight. Look, when I watched Ketlyn Souza, there was moments where I thought, yep, Ketlyn Souza's live in this fight. She's going to be good. She's got some good qualities about her. But then there was moments where I was like, okay, well, maybe Souza has some holes and things that she needs to work on and fix. And I do think that Souza's got the ability to be able to work on those things and potentially start, you know, rounding out a game and patching the holes in a game as well. But I think that this is not the fight where she's going to have patched herself up to be able to beat Karine Silva. Now, Ketlyn Souza does a good job within the striking, Muay Thai base. She's got decent wrestling and grappling herself, so she's well-rounded. But I just feel that Karine Silva's just going to be slightly better in every single area. Like, I don't think she's going to be significantly better everywhere, but I think she's going to be the slightly better striker, the slightly better wrestler, the slightly better grappler, and all those things from an offensive and a defensive perspective as well. And it's those types of fights that are actually just really difficult for the opponent and the fighter who is slightly worse in those areas to really do anything, because they just tend to come unstuck with everything that they try. And I kind of feel like I said, I don't think Silva's going to absolutely blow Souza out the water, but I just think she's going to, again, when all said and done and we're looking at the winner of this fight, I think we're going to be just sat here thinking, yeah, Silva was just better and Ketlyn Souza didn't really or wasn't able to really get anything off against Silva to really stamp a moment in this fight. So, yeah, I think it's a tough fight for Souza, but only because she's just slightly not as good as a quality of fighter as Silva in all those three disciplines. So for those reasons, I'm picking Karine Silva to win this fight. And in the next fight, I actually kind of think this should be on the main card, if I'm being honest. We've got Eliseu Zaleski dos Santos versus Abubakar Nurmagomedov. This is going to be a tough one in regards to just repeating the names during the breakdowns, never mind actually, you know, breaking the fight down. But, you know, from the fight breakdown perspective, it's very similar actually to what I said with Alex Caceres and Daniel Pineda. You know, I went into this fight thinking, look, Dos Santos is going to have the striking to be able to light Nurmagomedov up. If Dos Santos can just nullify what Nurmagomedov is going to likely try and do in this fight from a wrestling perspective, he should be able to win comfortably. But actually looking into tape, I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult for Dos Santos than what I initially thought. And I genuinely think, you know, you go back and look at the Nurmagomedov and the Omar Gadziev fight, and I just don't think that that's Nurmagomedov inside the cage. I think he potentially had an off night, and I've said this a lot, and I'm going to be saying it later on in this podcast as well, for one of the other fighters at least. So I just think that Nurmagomedov had to wrestle too much against Omar Gadziev. Not too much that he can't relentlessly wrestle himself and win, but he had to deal with wrestling from Omar Gadziev as well. So not only did he have to, well, not only did his cardio have to hold up from an offensive wrestling perspective, he also had to defensively wrestle as well. And I think that really hurt the cardio, which made Nurmagomedov look a little bit tired and a little bit sloppy striking later in the fight. Whereas with Dos Santos, he's not going to have to worry about that wrestling coming back. I mean, Dos Santos might shoot a takedown or two, maybe, but it's not going to be at the same level as Omar Gadziev. I don't think there's going to be any success rate in it either. So really, from Dos Santos' side, Nurmagomedov's just got to really worry about the striking. And I do think Dos Santos is going to have a slight striking advantage here. You know, I don't think there's any question marks or questions about that. However, the one fight you go back and look at is Nurmagomedov and Jared Gooden. Now, Jared Gooden, although there is some question marks on him being a UFC caliber fighter, personally I think he is at a level, Jared Gooden's got decent striking and he's got power. And look, Nurmagomedov went in there and didn't even need his wrestling. He pieced him up for like two and a half rounds. Nurmagomedov did eventually shoot a takedown, you know, second half of the last round, just to, you know, finish things off nicely for him. But man, Nurmagomedov's striking looked really good, slick, in and out of range, making Jared Gooden miss on some of his punches. And look, Dos Santos is a level above Jared Gooden in regards to the striking, but the point I'm trying to make is, although I do still believe Dos Santos has got a slight striking advantage, I do think it is slight, because I think Nurmagomedov can strike. We've seen it against Gooden. So I think from the striking perspective, if it's a 15-minute kickboxing fight, if this fight is on the feet, striking for 15 minutes, I think that Dos Santos likely takes the fight, whether it be a late finish or a decision. But this is mixed martial arts, and I think once Nurmagomedov starts mixing in the wrestling and the takedowns, even if he's not being overly successful, as long as he's just disrupting the rhythm and the flow of Dos Santos on the feet, breaking those moments up where Dos Santos is starting to really look fluid, I do think the Magomedov can just grind this fight out. He will score some takedowns along the way. Maybe they're not going to be that successful early on in regards to the completion rate or the top control time, but I think the Magomedov can do this for a full three rounds, as long as it is just offensive wrestling, which it should be. I don't see any defensive wrestling needing to be done for Nurmagomedov. So I think the cardio will hold up. And like I said, Dos Santos's way to win this fight is by really getting fluid with his strike and getting in his flow and piecing Nurmagomedov up. But if Nurmagomedov's got this wrestling game plan and he's just looking to close the distance, get a hold of him and just break that flow of Dos Santos, I think it's going to be difficult for Dos Santos. So for those reasons, I'm picking Abubakar Nurmagomedov to win this fight. And in the next fight, we should have had John Castaneda versus Matheus Mendonça. Unfortunately, Mendonça has pulled out. But the UFC have actually made a really good fight here by dropping in Muin Gafarov. So now we've got John Castaneda versus Muin Gafarov. I think it's just as good of a fight, maybe even a better fight than Matheus Mendonça, if I'm being honest. So I really like the step in. I'm glad the UFC haven't just thrown in some newcomer that's just been living in and around Vegas, just waiting for the opportunity and not really being ready for that UFC step up. Muin Gafarov's definitely, obviously, is a debutant, you know, making his debut in the UFC, but he's definitely a fighter that's ready. You know, he's been in and around it. He's been on the Contender Series. I believe he was the LFA champion as well. So he's a fighter that's absolutely ready for the UFC step up. And I think that from a stylistic perspective, he's going to have a style that could cause John Castaneda some problems. And John Castaneda's a really good, well-rounded fighter, by the way. He's got good striking, he's got a wrestling background, his jiu-jitsu seems to be okay. The top control time, once he gets his opponent down, is a little bit of a question mark. I think that that could be an area where he could develop. But from an all-round perspective, John Castaneda's a good fighter, well-rounded, and he's got power on the feet as well. So it's not going to be super easy for Muin Gafarov. I mean, it never really is in the UFC anyway, but I think Muin Gafarov, he's going to likely get out-volumed in this fight. I think that John Castaneda is going to have the more volume. But with Gafarov, Gafarov's got this really patient but explosive striking where he'll come in and he'll just land one big bomb. He won't waste strikes. He won't sit there and start throwing 100 punches hoping to hit 50% of them. He will strike when he thinks he can land rather than just putting that volume together, but he's got power. But the one thing that his striking does, especially from like the overhand bombs and the big winging hooks, it allows the wrestling to begin for Gafarov. And Gafarov's not one of these relentless wrestlers, but he will use his striking to set up his wrestling. And once he starts wrestling, again, he's not an absolute beast wrestler, but he's very good with the pressure against the cage, chaining takedowns together and scoring takedowns. And the thing is, he's got decent top control time, but it's that what some people would call boring top control time, where he'll just lay in guard, he'll do body, body, head, you know, just do the bare minimum for referees to not stand him up. He'll get warnings from the referees, but again, he does the bare minimum, which does more often than not prevent the referees from standing the fight back up to the feet. But if they do, again, he'll just use his big winging bombs and the forward to, he'll use his big winging bombs and the big winging hooks to present himself with forward pressure opportunities, which allows him to then close the distance and shoot into the takedowns. And again, just like I said with Dos Santos in the fight before against Nurmagomedov, I feel that if John Castaneda gets into a good striking flow here, I do think he's going to put it on Gafarov and potentially knock him out. But if Gafarov's able to just close the distance, get a hold of him and just start breaking that fight up a little bit, you know, we saw in Castaneda's last fight against Daniel Santos, forward pressure, constant forward pressure, backing Castaneda up, it does eventually tire him out. And then when you start adding in potential takedown attempts, maybe taking Castaneda down, Castaneda having to work back up to his feet and then taking him down again, I do think that he can wear on the gas tank of Castaneda over the course of three rounds, should it go three rounds. So look, I think Muin Gafarov, even though he's making this fight on short notice, I think he's got a good style to not just beat Castaneda, but beat a lot of fighters in this division. And again, I'm not sure on the ceiling of Gafarov. I'm not saying he's going to end up being a top 15 fighter or anything yet. I just feel that, look, Castaneda's not at that top 15 level either. And I think that Gafarov's style, with the power in his hands and the ability to close the distance and get in on the hips and get takedowns and just have that, again, just low volume, lay and pray type of top control time, I think it's going to work for him here. So for those reasons, I'm picking Muin Gafarov to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Andrei Arlovsky versus Dontayle Mays. Now, interestingly enough, I'm pretty sure Arlovsky opened up a favourite, and now the line's starting to flip, and Arlovsky was starting to see it like plus 100, plus 105. So it's real interesting that the money's coming on Dontayle Mays, especially after his last fight against Sakai, which I'm kicking myself for not betting, by the way. Like, I had a good read on Sakai, but I just wasn't, I think it was more doubt in Sakai as a fighter than the actual style of the fight. But Andrei Arlovsky, I think, has got that same style. He's got that pace where he can just dictate the range and dictate the pace of the fight and make his opponents fight at his pace, which is, you know, a slow pace. And Dontayle Mays, I think if he goes just punch for punch with Arlovsky, I think he's got the more likely chance of scoring a knockout in this fight. But Arlovsky's chin isn't as glass as, you know, we talk about every podcast. We're going back years now when we thought Arlovsky had a glass chin. But obviously Arlovsky can take a punch. So unless Dontayle Mays is putting together high combinations that, you know, say if he puts a 4-5 punch combination and three or four of those punches hit clean, then Arlovsky starts turtling up, then Dontayle Mays can start to look to finish the fight. Unless we see that type of scenario, I do think this is a fight for Arlovsky to win. I think if we go to it, if this fight goes to a three-round decision, I think we're going to see a low-volumed affair. I think we're going to see Arlovsky just doing just enough and just what he needs to do to out-volume Dontayle Mays ever so slightly. If it's close, the likelihood is Arlovsky is going to win a split decision anyway, just because that's how Arlovsky's fights seem to go. There's been plenty of decisions that I haven't scored to Arlovsky and very confident that the other side has won. So for Dontayle Mays, he's got to be aggressive. He's got to push through that slow pace setting that Arlovsky is going to set in this fight. And there's a possibility for Mays to do that. Like, I do think that Mays is explosive. I do think he's got power. And if he can just think, no, fuck this, I'm not fighting at Arlovsky's pace and range of the fight, and just starts breaking that pace and range up and closes the distance and puts combinations together on Arlovsky, I do think Mays is going to knock him out. However, I just I'm not convinced that Mays has got that ability to get through that set pace and range of Andrei Arlovsky. I do think it's going to be a typical Andrei Arlovsky fight where it's just low volume and he's slowly just punching away with the basic fundamentals and doing just enough to get what he need to do, what he needs to do to get that show purse and that win purse as well. So for all the reasons mentioned, I'm picking Andrei Arlovsky to win this fight. And in the next fight, this is a rescheduled fight from UFC 288. I'm glad that they've rescheduled the fight. I'm not glad that I have to break it down twice, but I will do. We've got Daniel Santos versus Johnny Munoz Jr. Two fighters that I bet on in the last fights. Both fighters won. One was an underdog, one was the favourite. Johnny Munoz was the less convincing. Andy was the favourite in that fight. I think he was like minus 250. I'm not sure if I actually parlayed Johnny Munoz. In fact, no, I didn't. I got him at less than minus 250 and I did play him straight. So, look, Johnny Munoz Jr., I do genuinely believe that he had a bad night, an off night. And I said this again against Abubakar Nurmagomedov. And it's becoming actually something that I'm saying a lot here because I am starting to notice off performances. And listen, in sports, every athlete, whether it be a fighter, a player, football player, rugby, tennis, whatever, every single athlete will have an off day, an off match, an off game, an off fight, whatever the sport they're in, they're going to have off performances because the human beings, and even at the highest level, you look at football, for example, Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi, do you think they've had a good game, an amazing game, every single game of their career? No, they haven't. They have off games. They have had off games, and that's just because they're human beings, and that's how athletes work. So I do think that Johnny Munoz had an off night against Ludovic Chalinian, and I do think that he's a better fighter than what he showed. However, with Daniel Santos on the other side, I think that Santos has got good forward pressure, good pace, good aggression, and Johnny Munoz, for him to really get his game going, he's a high-level black belt in jiu-jitsu, so that's the area where he's going to have most success in. And I think for Johnny Munoz to be able to get that grappling going, he's got to get the forward pressure going, he's got to be the one moving forwards. And I just don't think that he's going to be able to win this fight. I think stylistically, it's a fight that favours Daniel Santos. And I think that Daniel Santos coming forward is going to potentially either stop the takedowns of Munoz or make Munoz shoot desperate takedowns on the back foot, which Daniel Santos, I'd imagine, should be able to defend those types of takedowns in that situation. And then once Johnny Munoz Jr. is starting to be forced to strike and he knows that the wrestling and grappling isn't going to be as available to him, which I don't think it's going to be, I do think that Daniel Santos is going to start really pouring on the pressure. And I think Johnny Munoz is going to start to feel a little bit overwhelmed where he can't get Daniel Santos off him. Daniel Santos is moving forwards constantly and Johnny Munoz just can't get his game going. I think that's where Santos takes over. Maybe we see a late finish. If we don't, then I do think Santos takes the later rounds and, you know, is able to win this fight on the scorecard. So for those reasons, I'm picking Daniel Santos to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Jinyu Frey versus Elise Reed. Now, I do think that both fighters are well-rounded here. However, I do think Elise Reed's path to victory is within the striking. I think Jinyu Frey's path to victory is within the wrestling and grappling. And I think that's where the issue is going to be for Jinyu Frey, because I think that Elise Reed's going to be able to do enough from a defensive wrestling perspective to be able to nullify the takedown attempts of Jinyu Frey should she come into the fight with that type of game plan. If she doesn't, or even if she is forced to strike and the fight ends up playing out and being won and lost on the feet, then I think Elise Reed's just going to be the slightly better striker. From a boxing perspective, she's going to put some nice combinations together, some crisp strikes. I think she's got some underrated power as well, Elise Reed has. So again, I think Jinyu Frey is going to be just a little step behind on the strike. And I don't think this is a fight that's going to, you know, be run away by any of these women. I think that both fighters are going to be very competitive no matter where the fight goes. Look, if Jinyu Frey does complete some takedowns, I don't think she's going to get a severe amount of top control time. And on the same token, I don't think Elise Reed's going to absolutely whitewash her on the feet. I think wherever this fight goes, it's going to be close. I just feel that Reed's going to be the slightly better striker. Jinyu Frey's going to be the slightly better wrestler and grappler should the fight go there. But I'm just not convinced the fight's going to go there often enough for Jinyu Frey to be able to make this fight won and lost within the wrestling and grappling. So therefore, I do think that the fight's going to be were more likely going to be won and lost on their feet striking, and that's where I've already said multiple times now where I think that Elise Reed has her slight advantages. So for those reasons, I am going to be siding with Elise Reed to win this fight. Now in the next fight, we've got Luan Lacerda versus Damone Blackshear, and I think this is a really well-matched fight. I'm not sure why this fight is so low down on the card. I'm going to be saying the same for the final breakdown of this podcast as well in the next fight, but you know, it's a really good fight. You know, Luan Lacerda is a skilled opponent. He's a very high-level black belt, really good submissions, but he's got this real snappy submission game where fighters just, you know, really fear going down to the mat with Lacerda because he just snaps these positions on these submissions on really well. And if he doesn't get a submission, he'll look to try and get on top of his opponent and control things. But he's just he's an aggressive submission player. But the thing is, he always settles in his position before looking for the submissions. And where Lacerda is good is he doesn't have to settle and wait to settle for too long in these positions before hunting for submissions, just because his positional game in jiu-jitsu is at a high level, so he can settle straight away, then bang, he can start threatening with a finish for his opponents. It's very rare that his opponents want to go to the mat with him for that reason. And even you look at Cody Stamann, I know Stamann doesn't shoot as many takedowns as he used to, but Stamann absolutely wanted nothing to do with the ground game of Lacerda. Now Lacerda, from a striking perspective, it's not where he's as good as the jiu-jitsu, but man, he's still got some really good strikes. It's a Muay Thai style where he's very slow paced, but he'll fire these hard kicks to the body. And again, it doesn't come in much volume, but when he does throw, he throws with power and he's got good accuracy. Now on the other side with Damone Blackshear, Blackshear's a really good fighter. He's athletic, he's fast, he's got good movement, and he's good everywhere. He's a decent striker. The striking game, I believe, is getting better as well. His wrestling game's okay. His grappling game is a BJJ black belt. Now, you do have to take into consideration that BJJ black belts do come at different levels. So even though they're both black belts in this fight, Lacerda is going to be the better grappler. But I think that Damone Blackshear, his speed and his movement is going to play a big factor in this fight because, like I say, Lacerda is very slow-paced, Muay Thai style, stalking style, won't move erratically around the cage. So it's going to be on Damone Blackshear to really, you know, get his movement going, slide into range, land some nice strikes, slide back out of range. And I'm not sure whether Blackshear wrestles here, but I kind of don't think he has to. I think he could just literally make this a striking fight, get Lacerda quite frustrated, because look, Lacerda's going to be landing these big shots, and the one thing that I do have a concern for with Blackshear here is against Yusuf Zalal. Zalal started really working the body on Blackshear late in that fight, and Blackshear gassed badly, and I've not seen Blackshear gas that badly before that fight or after that fight. So it was definitely the hard body shots that really ended up wearing Blackshear down and tied him out to a real bad extent. Now Luan Lacerda's got those same types of hard body shots that he likes to throw, so it's the one consideration here from this fight, just on the analysis from what I've seen on either side. But if Blackshear does use his speed and movement well and takes angles and doesn't sit there for pictures after he's thrown a combination, I don't think Lacerda is going to be able to get too many of these body shots off. And actually, I think it's going to make Lacerda probably try and get a little bit desperate, close the distance and get Blackshear down. And I'm just not sure, again, if Blackshear's on his bike and he's moving around and he's picking Lacerda apart slowly, just building the volume up throughout the fight, I think Lacerda is going to end up, you know, just starting to fall behind in this fight the longer it goes on. I do think it's a well-matched fight. I do think that Lacerda is going to be live for a win here, but I just feel that Blackshear, again, when you've got a speed and movement advantage and you just do that little bit more than your opponent, you're just not going to be there for your opponent to hit or get a hold of you as often as they're probably going to need to be in order to win the fight. And for those reasons, I'm picking Damone Blackshear to win this fight. And in the final breakdown of this podcast, we've got Maxime Grishin versus Philippe Lins. Now, this is a rescheduled fight as well, and a fight that, you know, obviously I'll recover. It was quite a while now that it was lost. I think it was much earlier in this year, closer to January, which, you know, does actually feel like a lifetime now. Maybe it wasn't January, it was a little bit earlier than that. I'm not sure, but look, it feels like it was a while ago. Both fighters weighed in, both fighters squared off, and then Philippe Lins had to pull due to medical reasons. We don't know what that is. It could have simply been something as simple as a stomach bug, and he wasn't able, you know, to get off the toilet or anything like that. You know, it's happened. I've heard multiple stories of this type of thing before. So, look, the UFC have matched them back up. The one concern that I do have from Griffin's perspective is why he had to pull out against Jairton Almeida. Maybe we all know why he pulled out of that fight. Maybe not, you know, who knows. But in regards to Maxime Grishin, he has pulled out of a few fights. So where he's at from a medical perspective, I'm not too sure. But should he come into this fight fit and healthy, I think this is a really good fight for him. I think that Philippe Lins, although he did look good against Ovince St. Preux and he knocked him out in spectacular fashion, I'm just not sure how much stock he can put into that with Ovince St. Preux clearly being on a decline, clearly not being as active anymore. It's almost like OSP invited Lins on to knock him out. But then you look at Lins's previous fight when he made his light heavyweight debut against Marcin Prachniak. It was very slow paced. It was very hit and miss. He didn't really look great at all, if I'm being honest. And then you look at Maxime Grishin. Maxime Grishin's a fighter that has been in there against some good opponents himself. He's got decent striking. He's got good defensive wrestling. He's got good offensive wrestling as well. His grappling game's good. He's just one of these real tough fighters to beat. And again, like I've said for previous fighters, although he's got that knockout power, he's just a really good fighter across the board. Wouldn't say he's like world class in any one specific area. When I say world class, I mean UFC world class. But he's also got no real holes in his game either. And I think that someone like Philippe Lins is just not going to have the success that he had against OSP. And I kind of think that it's going to be a harder fight against Marcin Prachniak as well. And that fight, that win against Prachniak was very close. And, you know, it was razor close. And then, you know, I've mentioned Maxime Grishin's medical side. Philippe Lins has pulled out of a few fights as well and withdrew. You know, again, reasons unknown. But medically, we definitely know that one of them was a medical issue. So again, who knows what Philippe Lins is going to be like from, you know, is he going to be fit and healthy in this fight to be able to, you know, carry a fight across three rounds, which he might need to against somebody like Maxime Grishin? I'm not sure. But look, I think Grishin is going to be the better striker here. I think he's going to be the better wrestler. I think he's going to be the better grappler. I think the wrestling and grappling might be the suit for Grishin from a defensive perspective, because if Grishin is landing some hard shots on Lins, I think Lins will resort back to, you know, a grinding style where he's shooting takedowns and trying to pin Grishin against the cage. But then in those positions, I think Grishin's going to be the bigger and stronger fighter as well. I just think it's a tough fight for Philippe Lins, and it might be one of those fights. I kind of got this gut feeling where it's going to be one of those fights where I think that Grishin has just got that many edges in this fight, that many stylistic advantages, that it actually just doesn't play out as one side as I think it's gonna be. I've said it before where I feel like one fight is just gonna, he's just that much better style, he's got that much of a better stylistic fight than the opponent, and it just ends up being close and something that I didn't foresee happening. So maybe it's one of those fights where Lin just looks better than what I've given him credit for, and the fight stylistically isn't as stylistically favoured towards Grishin, and it ends up being closer than I think it's going to be. But like I said, from what I'm reading, from an analysis perspective, I do think it's a good fight for Grishin. So for those reasons, I'm picking Maxime Grishin to win this fight. And that's all for this episode of the podcast. I'm glad to be back. I hope you're glad to be back listening to the breakdowns as well. As always, if you're wanting to support me and the channel, supporting the channel is the way to support me. You know, if I've ever helped you win a bet, my analysis has been good, that you've hit a stupid parlay that you probably had no right to hit or anything like that, and you want to support me, just jump onto youtube.com. If you're not already listening and tuning in on YouTube, obviously if you're on one of the podcast platforms, that's fine. But if you can support the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/MMAplay365, give the video a like, drop a comment as well. It helps the YouTube algorithms. And of course, subscribe to the channel also. Really do appreciate it. Enjoy the fights on Saturday night. I'm Newsome. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back again next week.